Three, and invite Natasha to lead the discussion, please.
Thank you. Paper three summarizes the respondent views of some of the requests for disclosures about rate-regulated activities that we received. Many respondents think that the requirements in IFRS 14, which is the NRM standard, provide a good foundation for these disclosures. A few warned against disclosure overload and suggested that the existing requirements are sufficient using a combination of IAS 1, IFRS 8, and IFRS 14. Other respondents asked for disclosure of more detailed information, and some of that information is summarized in paper three. We think that quite a bit of the additional information is already covered by IFRS 8 and 14, but we wonder if additional application guidance or other educational material might be needed to demonstrate that that information would fit into those requirements. We also are wondering about how feasible it is to disclose some of the information that was requested. And if it's not feasible, then is that because the information is too difficult to identify or verify, or is it because it would make the disclosures too voluminous? So we are looking to the consultative group for comments about these topics, especially related to the questions in the box on page three of the paper. So as we've mentioned, at this stage, we're not looking to develop requirements, but instead for information to support an analysis of what information is most relevant for reporting the financial effects of rate-regulated activities and how best we can effectively communicate that information.
Natasha, could I just confirm one thing, that you're talking about this in the context of disclosures that support some kind of recognition regime rather than this being a discussion about disclosures as an alternative to recognition?
Yes.
I just thought I'd try and focus, help people focus on assuming that there's some level of recognition.
Yeah. I mean, so there, similar to some of the things that we've heard today, a lot of respondents were not in favor of having disclosure only. But even if they said, no, we don't want it, they said, but if that is how the board decides to go, then we do think this information is important. So some of that information is included in the list, but that the focus isn't for a disclosure only approach.
Thanks. Excellent. Very appropriate clarification. Let's start with Duane, please.
Yeah, and I do think, Mary, your comment's really important, because I do think our views would be very different if there is recognition or there isn't recognition. You know, I think if there is recognition, by virtue of having assets or liabilities on the face of the balance sheet, that provides an awful lot of cues to a reader as to what we believe are true economic resources or economic obligations or claims. Without that, you're going to have to give all kinds of disclosures to give the economic to really set forth the economic substance of the entity's position and situation. But I'm assuming that this was in the context of recognition. In that context, it seemed to me that a lot of these recommendations, just a general comment, very, very detailed. And in fact, any industry that I wasn't that familiar with, I'd love to have all these. I mean, there are some in here that you know, the regulatory on page 512H, an entity's assessment of its efficiency in using resources, its ability to collect, generate cash flows, dividends. I mean, that's kind of like, well, that's the whole purpose of financial statements. So my sense as I was reading through this is there is just throw everything onto the page that we'd love to have disclosure about. And I think to your point, Natasha, at least, you know, I'm not as familiar with the IASB standards, but under SEC disclosure requirements or FERC disclosure requirements, much of this is covered in various different ways throughout the regulatory filings, whether that's in the financial statements, management's discussion analysis, in the Form 10K in the US, in the business section, or whatever it might be, risks, you know, significant risk factors. So this seemed to me a little bit of a red herring in terms of an awful lot of information that any company should be disclosing with or without recognition of regulatory assets or liabilities. And so it almost seemed like, is this really a rate-regulated activity issue, or is this just because people don't understand this particular industry, and all of a sudden we're just throwing everything we can think of on a list. So it seemed very excessive. It seemed not necessarily focused on the regulatory assets and liabilities or deferred balances, I guess I should call it, that we're talking about. And you know, I guess more substantively with respect to some of the disclosures that would be very particular to deferred balances, two comments. One is, I do think I've heard over and over from users when we've had the session that Jane mentioned in the U.S., I think to a person, users would prefer that things be in the audited financial statements as opposed to in management's commentary. So I think there's a lot of value placed on having things that are subject to audit. And then secondly, I think a key consideration is that my company, we're about to have 6 different utilities. Each of those utilities operate in different jurisdictions. For instance, I will have one utility that has electric and gas and has both electric distribution and electric transmission and gas, so that's 5 jurisdictions right there, and they operate in 3 different states. So in the U.S., that's meaning 15 jurisdictions. So to give these detailed disclosures for each regulatory jurisdiction on a disaggregated basis, I think would become unworkable and really not very useful. Alternatively, I think relying on segment rules, if you will, and I know that's attached as an appendix to the discussion paper, you know, if your management team is looking at certain elements of your business regularly, then you, of course, you'd want your investors and creditors to see that view, and I think the segment rules can serve as a basis to decide at what level of aggregation you definitely need to be focused on. I don't see a need for additional rules to set that forth. So those are my opening comments, and I think a little bit more global than going through the line by line here.
Thank you, Dwayne. Michelle, please.
Sure. I agree with you, Dwayne. In addition to that, one of the comments that was made that there should be maybe a reconciliation of the rate base and the financial statements. And for the same reasons, you know, if you take your example, in one jurisdiction, you will have already 15 reconciliations. So I believe it's not feasible to get that information. That's my first comment. My second one relates to IFRS 14. I believe overall, I agree with the IFRS 14 requirement as being a good starting point for what we are trying to set up here, except as Dwayne said, for the disaggregation. But what I wanted to speak about is the separate presentation of the regulatory asset and liabilities, you know, in the profit and loss account. On the balance sheet, I believe, you know, the regulatory assets are already separated on one line, except maybe for the ones embedded in the property, plant, and equipment. And I think we're going to come back to that one later. But in the profit and loss account, having only one line where you're going to be netting all the revenue and the expenses from the industry perspective, I don't believe it represents the economic reality. And those numbers should be spread between the revenue and the cost items.
Thank you. Jacob, please.
I agree with Michelle and Dwayne. There's one thing that puzzled me in terms of the comments, and that was in terms of IS 8, in terms of segmentation. I would have thought that what the users would like to see is more forward-looking, because your segmentation more tells you about what has happened during the year, etc. And if I look at the user, I would have been more interested in terms of the timing, etc. What's going to happen in terms of the regulatory assets and liabilities.
Thank you. Michael, please.
Thanks. I mean, it's interesting reading this because it smacks to me a little bit of, if you ask, you know, people what they want from an information point of view, the answer will always be more. And therefore, if you say to them what else would be helpful, you'll just get a very big long list. And I do have some concerns about the level of detail here and necessarily why you would pull this out as being any different from any other industry. where, you know, there's some quite specific things that are going within that. And that actually there are other standards that deal with the purpose of financial statements, and actually why should you not simply approach this from a principles point of view? I mean, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, relevant information useful to financial users, and to an extent, you know, the companies and their advisors are the ones that should be able to determine that. And I think as the industry develops that, you'll get compatibility because, you know, comments will come into the company, they'll look at what others are doing, and then you'll start to see some alignment. And I absolutely agree with Duane and IFRS 8 and segmental disclosures. I don't think I've ever seen a company that's got regulated and non-regulated activities within it amalgamate those two activities within a single segment. It just doesn't happen because that's not the way they manage the business. And therefore, I think a lot of what users are saying they're looking for, you will probably get within the segmental disclosures, actually, as a result of that. Will you get some aggregation across jurisdictions? Well, yes, you will, because that's how the business is managed, and practically that's how they do that. The last comment I would make is quite interesting, looking at the additional requests, particularly around the requests around, you know, the RAB or the regulated asset base. I think that is an area that is potentially fraught with quite a bit of difficulty for a whole variety of different reasons. And I think there's a big question there for me as to whether or not that's something that comes as part of management commentary or something that comes in a set of audited financial statements. Because if, you know, if the RAB is measured on a different basis from IFRS wherever we land up, then why would you put it in a set of audited financial statements? Because it isn't a gap measure, in effect. It may be something which is useful to investors, but then that might be something that you would put in management commentary, for example.
Thank you, Michael. Pascal?
Yes, I think Jean will not be surprised, but I'm a supporter of IFRS 15, so not a surprise for you. I don't see any reason to ask for disclosures which would be different from the one already asked in IFRS 15. I'm not going to read IFRS 15 paragraph 110, but I think it's quite exhaustive about nature, contracts, and so on. That's my first point. Of course, I agree with what was said before. And I think for regulation, even with regulation, people may not understand, but the information is usually available on the site of the regulator and so on. So we cannot put in the financial statement all the information, public information. So if people want to have some more information about the regulations, they just go to the website and they will have such information. So, and really, I think there is no reason for me to have a specific or different treatment for regulated activities from other industries.
Thanks, Pascal. Duane, please.
Yeah, and the following up on Jacob's point on the forward-looking information, and it goes back to Mary's opening premise. I mean, to the extent that there is not recognition, then I think there is a need to give significant forward-looking information, because without recognizing regulatory assets or liabilities, you're not giving any signal as to what the true economic substance of future expected cash flows is going to be. And so then you would need a bunch of disclosure. By virtue of booking deferred accounts, and in fact in the US we differentiate current versus long term for our deferred accounts to give users a sense of how will future cash flow be impacted by regulatory reality actions that have been taken by the regulator. And so then you don't need all that additional disclosure because it's already signaled on the face of your financial statement. So I do think, to your point, Jacob, that forward looking, it, you know, obviously if the stuff's not on the balance sheet, then the whole point is we don't think then the financial statements really reflect the economic reality, and then you need a whole bunch of disclosure to say, well, here's what's really going to happen, and here's what our real sustainable earnings profile looks like. But if we do recognize, then I, again, my opening comments would stand. With respect to the rate base comment, following up on maybe Michael's point, I think in the U.S., and this gets to the embedded regulatory balances within plant, property, and equipment, the plant, property, and equipment balance has historically been what the users look to as the approximate rate base, and it's not an exact dollar for dollar because certain regulators will have some adjustments, but it's virtually equivalent in most cases to rate base. And that, so what happens then is the user can take that property, plant, and equipment balance as a proxy for the invested capital on which the regulator is allowing you to earn return. And then if you have information about allowable returns, then they're able to model what your expected return might be going forward. If we were to break apart some of the reg assets and deferrals, then maybe you would need to do some sort of reconciliation to get back to that PP&E balance that more closely approximates the rate base on which you are allowed a return. So something we'll just have to keep focused on as we move forward. And the, you know, overall, I think this was covered in the summary of the discussion paper responses, but I think I should highlight, I think it is very important to give some perspective to the readers in your disclosures, the nature and extent of the types of regulation that you are under, and any risks or uncertainties regarding the recoverability of regulatory assets, the remaining periods over which those assets will be recovered, as well as whether you're earning a return on any of those regulatory assets. So those are all disclosures that currently are included in most, I think, all the North American type GAAP. And then we also disclose any material changes in balances. And we have about 6 pages of footnotes for our 6 utilities that list the major types of regulatory assets and liabilities, just to give readers a sense of what they are and the substance of them. So that I would certainly expect would be an expectation. Whether that's covered in existing IFRS standards or not, I leave that to you guys, but that was it.
Thank you. Jay?
Sorry, just to pick up on Dwayne's point about the in the US, the PP&E figure is roughly equivalent to the regulatory asset base. I think that's an issue, and you're quite right, we'll need to come back to this one, because that is very dependent on the type of regulation, and there are lots of other countries and jurisdictions, and I'm looking at Jakob and Lily, where there are other adjustments to the regulatory asset base that could be inflationary adjustments, all sorts of other differences between those two numbers. So not necessarily for now, but just bear in mind that sometimes those two numbers are very, very different.
Yes. So Richard, a couple of things. We do provide a reconciliation of our IFRS numbers back to the, so that's our PP&E numbers back to the rate base. Now, that's not to say that we're better than anybody else. It's just that I'm in one segment business. It's relative, the numbers are big, but it's relatively simple for me to be able to do that. How easily that would be transported to some of the other people, like Dwayne, with the number of different regulators he's dealing with, I'm not sure. It just demonstrates that it can be done. We do provide the summary of that number in our quarterly management update. Sorry, management's discussion and analysis, so that users can see the number and if there is significant difference. And typically there is. Dwayne says that it's easy to go from the fixed assets number, the property, plant, and equipment. It's actually not quite that easy. And the reason why I say that is because your PP&E number is a year-end number, whereas typically, at least in Canada, and I'm not sure if it's the same in the U.S., the rate base is a mid-year number. So there typically can be a big difference. So if you look at us, for example, we're going to add $3 billion in assets this year. So there's going to be a significant difference between our starting PP&E number and our ending PP&E number, and therefore a mid-year rate base. So our mid-year rate base will be significantly different from our year-end number. Now, there's a whole bunch of other adjustments that you need to make as well, but that's the biggest one.
Thank you. Jacob?
If you look at our financial statements, your PPE will be at cost. For regulation purposes, we will look at depreciated replacement cost. And then you'll add, for example, work under construction. It may be included in your PPE. And then also we look at networking capital, where you look at your debtors, your creditors, and some other, and your inventories. So it's a little bit different maybe than Dwayne knows.
Thanks. I'd like now to invite our...
I'm just a short comment.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. Basically, I'd like to ask some good disclosure about the regulatory risk, what stability of the regulatory system, because based on our step paper, many users are worried about that part. Also, maybe some developed countries might have a good guarantee of their this kind of reducing, eliminating all regulatory risk. So maybe some underdeveloped, they might not have such a good mechanism. So what additional disclosure do you think that's a good idea to explaining this kind of a regulatory risk? Do you have any specific idea? Or?
So in our MD&A, we have very significant disclosure around regulatory risks at the end of the year. We don't repeat everything in the quarters, but what we do is we refer people back to the year-end one and say, if you want more detailed discussion, go and look at our year-end MD&A. Mm-hmm. And so we have several pages in there around many risks, not just the regulatory ones, but they do take up quite a bit of space in there. The other thing, too, is that we have a document called the AIF, the Annual Information Form, and we have even more discussion around risks in that document as well.
Thank you. Let me invite our guests, our remote colleagues. So, Manwa, any comment? Sherman?
Yes. As a user, I find myself surprised that the amount of information that was requested seemed excessive to me. I know in the U.S., the disclosures that we use seem very adequate. And I do want to reinforce that disclosures, I prefer disclosures to be audited. The other thing that I'd want to reinforce is that the disclosure should help users understand future cash flows, not just the current year, but into second and third years, because we look that far out, maybe even further at times. It also should help users understand when revenue will be recognized, and I think that follows the same as a cash flow. So that's it.
Thank you, Chairman. John?
I think one of the points that was made earlier was that maybe the disclosure would be different depending on whether or not there is recognition of the asset and liabilities versus where there isn't. And again, I think as many of the comments have said, I agree. I think we've just got to temper how much disclosure. I think there could be information overload, particularly if there is no recognition, then there will be a tendency to over-disclosure. I think one of the comments that was made that might be useful, and I'm thinking of this again from an audit hat, there's talk about a probability assessment where there is recognition. I read that as something akin to the kind of notes that are in the accounts now that deal with the use of judgment or assumptions or estimations. There's something that gives the reader some insight into the likelihood that the amounts that have been recognized will be realized in future periods.
Thanks, Sean. Lily, would
like
to.
So I agree with what have been said here about the future cash flow. And beside that, I would like to add that the most important thing to state in the standard is the disclosure according to materiality. So if the inflation is very material in Israel, and the difference between the regulatory and the and not regulatory income is influenced by it, then it should be noted very, very specifically. But if it's not material, then why bother the reader of the statement? That's all.
Thanks. Last comment before our coffee break. Richard, please.
I just wanted to follow up on the comment made on the phone, and that is, and I noticed it in the paper as well, that there was a suggestion here that we should provide probabilities. And my thought is that most utilities would not want to do that because they would be revealing their hand to the regulator and basically saying, don't bother sending me all the money I just asked for. Just send me the 80% probability that I just disclosed in my financial statements. So I don't think that would be good disclosure. I think IAS 37 already covers it. If I feel that I cannot collect the money that I have applied for, then I should be creating a provision against that.
Thank you very much. Jane and Natasha would like to make any concluding comments before we go to the coffee break. No? Well, Sophie, thank you very much for your comments. We are now set for our coffee break. We are a little bit ahead of time, but this is not an issue. Can we please reconvene at 11:45, please. So this will be